Welcome, everybody, to another exciting edition of Speaking English. Today, we are doing an F1-specific podcast, wrapping up the first 2 weeks of what is already a pretty enthralling season in the championship. There have been no shortage of storylines as newcomers Braun GP have jumped out to a commanding early lead this season. Jenson Button and Rubens Barrichello have both had fantastic performances so far, and traditional powerhouses, at least over the last couple of years, McLaren and Ferrari have just looked utterly terrible. So there's really a lot to discuss. Started off the season with the Australian GP and then a Malaysian Grand Prix that was cut short due to rain last week. I've got with me, as always, Carl Strand. And Carl is sort of our resident F1 expert here. So he's going to be kind of leading the charge today as we talk about the exciting things that are happening in the championship. First of all, Carl, what has happened with Braun? How could a team that is effectively the Honda team from last year, which was pretty much the worst team in F1, how could they go from last to first this quickly when they didn't even know whether or not they were going to be racing until about a month before the season began?
None of this really surprises me at all, actually. I mean, what it is, it's the Honda team who spent just as much money as Ferrari, was just Fiat or Toyota. Actually, Toyota spends the most. And they got Ross Braun, who was the Ferrari's leader with Schumacher, and Schumacher and Braun sort of together resurrected Ferrari from complete mediocrity in the 80s and early 90s. And so then he had an extra year, and I mean, last year everybody knew that Honda was just taking last year off in order to prepare for all the rule changes. So, I mean, really, this is an incredibly well-financed car that had a longer development life or time than any of the others, with perhaps the best team director in Formula One. And, I mean, Rubens is, he's not a great driver, but he's really solid and experienced. He's a Ross Braun guy. And then I really think Jenson Button is an excellent driver, and he's experienced and he's steady, and he's exactly what if you were to take a car, say, we're going to have a driver who's never won races. We're going to have a team that's never won races, and we're going to lead. I mean, I guess Jenson Button would be the best of all of those potential drivers. I mean, I don't know. I think it's a situation that makes sense.
It seems like Jenson has sort of developed a reputation over the years for underperforming or underwhelming performances. I think the only race he had won prior to this season was the Hungarian Grand Prix from, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
It was, 2 years ago, I think. Well, the Honda, it was the last time the Honda looked decent. So that was, it might have been, it might have been 3 years ago.
Okay. Well, he's now come in and already tripled his win total after the first two races of this season. A lot of this obviously comes down to the amount of time spent developing this car. As you said, Honda basically took last year off and spent all of that time developing their car for this season. But I know that there's a lot of controversy right now around the way the rules have been interpreted, and specifically surrounding the diffuser that's utilized. I think you know a good bit more about the technical end of things. So can you step us through a little bit of what the situation is with that diffuser and how it impacts the championship, and how it has made Braun and the other two teams, Williams and Toyota, how it's made them front runners?
Well, you know, I don't, my aerodynamic technical knowledge isn't as thorough as maybe it should be, but I know that the diffuser is sort of an aerodynamic device. It's on the back of the car. It sort of, I don't know, does something to the air as it comes out the back. And the whole idea of the diffuser, as the rules are theoretically written, was that it would be small, as therefore to create less of a wake to disturb the air for a following car. And
okay.
The three diffuser teams or special diffuser teams have found some sort of loophole that lets them make like a larger, more efficient diffuser.
Okay.
And that's, like, supposed to be the big difference. I don't really know how much of a factor it would be. I think it's interesting that the Red Bulls don't have the special diffuser, but they seem to be fairly quick. I mean, they seem to me to be about as quick as the Williams.
Do the Red Bull – one of the other big changes this season has been the addition of the KERS system, the kinetic energy recovery system, which allows drivers to effectively store up power over a period of time and then use that as a boost. Obviously, it's most useful in the straightaways. Do the Red Bulls make use of that diffuser? I believe they do, correct?
No, they don't.
They don't?
No.
Interesting.
And they don't make use of the diffuser. But I think you asked about the KERS.
Yeah.
I don't think that they use the, I don't think they have KERS. My feeling on KERS is that I'm going to take a cue from Braun, actually, and say that I think it's probably worthless. If you look at the team with maybe the best technical mind, with the longest development time, they put out the best car, no KERS.
Fair enough.
So I think it's a gimmick. I'm not a big fan. I don't think that the Red Bulls have it either, and I think that Adrian Newey, who's the second best, or, you know, maybe other thought of as the other top designer, is the Red Bull. They might use it, but I don't think they do.
Fair enough. I did notice just from watching the Malaysian Grand Prix, particularly this past weekend, I think it was watching Fernando Alonso in particular, a good battle that he was involved in, that the benefit of the KERS seems very short-lived. It can help an underpowered car make a pass when it's necessary and gain some speed down the straights, but it's such a quick burst that its usefulness is very short-lived, and it seems like it really is kind of underwhelming, all things considered. I guess the big decision that teams had to make is whether or not they wanted to add this KERS system, which I think they say weighs something like 60 kilograms, which is a hell of a lot for an F1 car. Whether that the benefit of the KERS outweighs the development costs and the addition of the extra weight to the car.
The way that the weight works is actually the car's not actually lighter without it. They have to be up to the same minimum weight. It's where the weight's distributed.
Okay.
And the center of gravity on the KERS cars is a lot higher. Apparently, the Ferrari, the KERS system is cramping up the inside and it makes the fuel tank smaller.
Okay.
The problem with KERS is having to put it in there instead of having like ballast that's like specifically designed, like, you know, like ballast to balance the weight of the car like perfectly. You have to have this KERS thing in there instead. And that's the difference.
Interesting.
And so I feel like where you see like KERS being used to prevent passing and whatnot, I feel like you wouldn't, it's like almost a phantom effect, because I think if the car was designed without it, it wouldn't be that close. If that makes any sense. Like, it just...
No, that makes perfect sense.
It would be, like, less dramatic, but the same effect.
Interesting. Well, I guess the question that I have at this point, after seeing how Braun has performed in the first two races, and admittedly, Malaysia was cut short. I mean, almost half of the race was missed because obviously there was this torrential downpour. They thought that it might be coming for a long time, which actually wound up getting Ferrari in a big heap of trouble when they put wet tires on Kimi Raikkonen's car about six or seven laps, I think, before the rain actually started to come down, and the tires just tore themselves apart and effectively ended any chance that he had of being competitive. But the race was cut short. Jenson Button was in the lead. So Braun has now taken the win in the last two races. Rubens Barrichello did not follow up his second-place performance in Australia with a great run this last week. But the way things are looking right now, do you think that Braun is going to be the dominant force this season? Or is this just sort of early season hiccups, and as the other teams start figuring out how to best apply the new rule changes, that they're going to start catching up?
I mean, I do feel like the other teams are going to start catching up. I don't feel like McLaren or Ferrari are really going to make that big of a push. I mean, because effectively, there's no reason to believe that Ferrari's run by geniuses after Braun left because of how many stupid things they've done recently. They spent, and they don't spend any more money than BMW. They don't spend any more money than Toyota. So, I mean, why would Ferrari suddenly jump back out to the lead? I think the same thing about McLaren. I don't think they're coming back. To me, the team that might push Braun at the end, by the end of the year is Toyota. Because Toyota,
certainly,
they spend a lot of money, and they're closer.
And yeah, I mean, they've certainly been performing very well so far this season. I mean, Timo Glock and Jarno Trulli, who last year had very middling seasons, relatively speaking, are third and fourth in the Drivers' Championship at this point. So they certainly seem to be the most competitive team. What about Red Bull, who obviously had a great season by their standards last year? Do you think that they're going to be challenging or thereabouts at the end of the season, or are they going to have a rough time of it?
As far as I'm concerned, I think the championship is going to go down to either Toyota or Braun.
Fair enough.
And I think that after that, it's going to be really crazy. I mean, Red Bull, I think, will continue to be fast. I think Williams is going to stay at kind of where they are, which is to say above everyone now, and they'll probably be in the middle by the end of the year. And I think that McLaren and Ferrari will spend a huge amount of money clamoring their way up from the back to the middle. And Renault will probably stay in the middle. And BMW, I don't think BMW is going to be that great this year either. So I think there's going to be a lot in the middle with Toyota and Braun out at front.
Fair enough. Now, Robert Kubica, who races for BMW, obviously was one of the best racers last year. Nick Heidfeld finished second at Grand Prix of Malaysia, and Kubica just barely missed out after a late incident with Vettel in the first race on a podium finish. You don't think that there's a chance that Heidfeld and Kubica might be able to put something together as the season goes on, and that the early season hiccups that they've had will sort of fade away?
Well, I mean, Heidfeld's second at Malaysia was sort of a bullshit thing. It was like they got lucky because the race was red flagged right when it was. And like if they had gone around for another two laps, then he wouldn't have been in third anymore. So that's kind of a gimmick. And I mean, and Kubica did race well in Australia. Kubica is one of the best. And the BMW is not a bad car, but I guess I just don't think that it's to the level of the Toyota or the Braun. I mean, and the Toyota's not close to the Braun. The Braun's way out in the lead. I just feel like Braun's not going to be able to spend the same amount of development money as Toyota. So I feel like Toyota starting at the front of the large manufacturers is going to be the one who can spend the development dollars to get to Braun.
Okay.
That's what it's just like, and I feel like, I just don't feel like over the course of the 18 race season with no testing and all this stuff that it's going to be able to change that much. And therefore, the ones that are at the back, effectively, I think that Button's going to win the championship because I think that Toyota is going to be the team that's pushing Braun, and neither of the Toyota drivers are capable of pushing Button.
That's perfectly reasonable. It's interesting to see Jenson Button regarded as the favorite after being an underachiever in F1 for so long, but it certainly seems like with Braun, he finally has the car that he needs to beat that milk float.
I think he's a really good driver. I think that Planet F1 or whatever said something about it after that the first round of pit stops, he was in third. They pit the first he went in last. The first two pit, and he went out there and Schumacher-esque put down the fastest laps of the race thus far and took first while they were in the pits. And he came back out in first. I mean, that's just like that is what an excellent driver does. He puts the hammer down when he has to And he does it. He doesn't fuck it up. You know, he fucked up the start a little bit, but he made it back right there. A great driver doesn't lose his calm, and that's what Jensen does. I honestly think he would be a deserving champion.
Now, let me ask, because this is something that I've been considering. For a long time, the Brits in sports where they haven't been traditionally dominant have always tended to kind of hinge their hopes on one or two guys. For a long time in the world of tennis, it was Tim Henman. Now Andy Murray sort of has that same stigma attached to him. But for quite a while, Jenson Button was the British representative in Formula One, and as such, there was a heck of a lot of pressure on him. Do you think that the pressure on him and maybe his ability to succeed has been improved by the fact that Lewis is now seen as the great hope of British driving, and that all of the pressure, the weight of media expectation, etc., is on the shoulders of Lewis Hamilton as opposed to Jenson Button?
I agree with you. I agree with you, though I do feel like – I kind of feel like there's no expectation now on either of them. I kind of feel – first of all, this is a good chance for me to bring up a little statistic I saw recently that the team that – or the country that has produced the most Formula One world champions is England, and they've produced like 9, 8. And then okay. The second country, it's Brazil and Finland are tied with 3 each. England is well and away the leader in world champions. So I mean, you can't like they can't have that sense. And I don't know. And I mean, obviously they did because they're England and Lewis did deal with that and Jensen did too. But now that they've won, I feel like now that they won that world title, their soccer is easily the best in the world, and that's just like proven to them all the time. I don't know, right. maybe the English attitude, it almost feels like there is none of that this year.
I think that's reasonable. I mean, prior to Lewis, I'm having trouble remembering, but I'm thinking that the last British champion would have been Damon Hill, is that right?
Damon Hill and then Nigel Mansell.
Okay, and then Mansell, all right. But effectively, it had been something like 10, 11 years since the last British champion prior to Lewis, right?
Okay. Most of the countries go through longer spans than that.
Oh, absolutely. But I think that we tend to see with the Brits, maybe it's like it's much like the little man complex. You know, they're a relatively small nation, but they always have a huge expectation for their athletes. And obviously, since they have been so dominant in the past in F1, there's a lot of weight riding on the shoulders of these guys.
That's true. And Formula One's also, like, completely English. I mean, all the teams are either based in Germany or England, but most of them are based in England. You know, even the Japanese ones have all their, like, racing headquarters in England. Everything's always been in England. England is, like, the home of international top-class motorsport.
Fair enough.
So I guess, you know.
Kind of using that to segue into talk of what's happened to Lewis Hamilton this year. Lewis finished on the track. He finished fourth in the Australian Grand Prix. He was awarded after truly accepted third place on the podium. Lewis was awarded third place because truly had passed him under the yellow flag at the end of the race. Then it comes out that Lewis had actually initially passed Trulli when Trulli had gone off the track under that same yellow flag. And when Lewis was questioned about it, he, at the behest of the McLaren team, lied about whether or not he was actually given instructions to do that. Now, all of a sudden, McLaren, which is already suffering greatly with Heikki Kovalainen not even having completed a single lap this year, McLaren is scheduled to go before the FIA or the WMSC. I'm not sure exactly what that stands for. Effectively, they're going before this commission, and they have to try and give an account of why they committed, as Bernie Ecclestone put it, fraud and lied to the race steward.
This pisses me off. We'll just cut the explanation off there just because I'm getting mad. This is so stupid. This is like asking, you know, asking the quarterback if his arm was moving forward. Like, asking him. Or, you know, was your intention to throw the ball or was it to fumble? You know, and, like, using that and being like, oh, you lied. You said that it was to fumble. I mean, why are we – this is a sport. Why are we asking the participants to tell us what happened? I mean, this –
It does seem a little ridiculous.
Who gives a shit what your motivation is? You know, this is like disqualifying Man U because Cristiano Ronaldo took a dive. I mean, it's the most absurd crap I've ever heard of. The FIA just needs to, at the end of the race, sit down with the videotape, which they should have on all of the necessary portions of the track to figure this shit out, or if people watching, can't be that hard. And they should just figure out what happened, and they should put it all together. Oh, you know, I mean, if somebody goes off onto the grass, then the rule should be they get to get passed. And if they let him back by, well, then that's their problem. I don't know. I mean, there has to be a way to just sort this shit out without asking to the drivers.
I mean, that does seem perfectly reasonable to me. I think this speaks to a larger problem in F1, which is that it's really being over-officiated, it seems like, at this point. In the Australian Grand Prix, the incident between Vettel and Kubica was – it was a racing incident. They were two drivers. They were fighting for position at the end of the race, and they came into contact with each other and wound up taking both of them out. It's the sort of thing that happens, but all of a sudden, Vettel is getting dropped 10 places from his qualifying position for the Malaysian Grand Prix. He was fined something like $50,000 for the sort of thing that effectively the new rule changes were designed to create. These rule changes were designed to create closer, more competitive racing. They wanted to eliminate gaps between the cars and ensure that there was going to be more passing and there were going to be more of these battles over the course of the season. So why, if they're going to make that sort of transition towards more competitive racing, are they going to come in and over-officiate and try and break all of this stuff down and try and place blame on these drivers and cost them points in the standings, cost them money. I mean, it seems a little bit ludicrous to me.
It's absurd. No, I agree. I mean, I honestly, okay, this is totally conspiracy, and I'm not usually one for conspiracies, but I really feel like the FIA wants Ferrari to be in the lead. And if Ferrari's not on top, shit's going to hit the fan. And, I mean, this thing with Kubica and Vettel is not really Ferrari related. But this shit with Lewis Hamilton is totally Ferrari related. I mean, because it's Ferrari versus Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, it really does seem that way. I mean, admittedly, the tactics that McLaren used was it last year that the whole spying issue was going on, or was it the season before?
It was a season before. Well, I don't. Yeah, it was not. Okay, it's the season before this last one, because this last one they won it fair and square.
Okay, fair enough. But it does seem like there is sort of an agenda against the McLaren team, and it's causing this whole issue right now to be blown way out of proportion. I mean, I would think the fact that at this point in the season, Lewis Hamilton has 1 point, and that's all that McLaren has scored in the championship, is punishment enough for whatever infraction may have occurred in that first race. It seems a little ludicrous to be talking about now disqualifying the team from the rest of the championship season, which is what the talk is right now. And it's leading to talk of Hamilton possibly quitting McLaren, which, you know, I mean, they have brought Lewis up, you know, since he was a kid. They have been his supporters. They have been the ones who have really made him what he is today. And it does feel like there is an agenda against this team. Is there any... I guess what I want to know, since you bring up the whole conspiracy theory issue, is what reasoning could the FIA have for wanting Ferrari to be in the lead or for wanting McLaren to fail so desperately?
I mean, I feel like it could go be so simple as either Bernie or Max not liking Ron Dennis. I mean, if you think about it, it's just these three old crotchety English dudes, you know, who just like make, and then there's whoever the boss is at Ferrari, and then he's down in Italy. But these other two are going to be, you know, either in Paris or London, you know, Max and Bernie or wherever the hell they are. And they just, I just think they might just dislike Ron. I mean, it's all just a complete, I mean, it's just a joke. It's not like a ruling body. It's not like a commissioner. It's like some sort of guy who just is on a power trip.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. It's pretty hard to argue that logic. I'm with you on this one. I think conspiracy might be a little too strong a word for it, but it definitely does seem like they are out to get.
I guess it doesn't have to be a conspiracy because it's really so simple as it could be one or two guys just not liking another one because they all have so much power. They can make this happen without needing any sort of conspiracy.
That's very true.
They can just decide it because, I mean, that's not a conspiracy, and that's the way that things like this actually happen.
Yeah. Well, so, that's very true.
And Ferrari, I think, made more money for Formula One. I mean, they're more profitable.
Well, I mean, they're certainly the face of Formula One. I mean, it's been said that Ferrari really exists as a car manufacturer in order to support their endeavors in Formula One. So it's especially shocking to see how unsuccessful they've been this season and that they look just so completely unprepared.
Ferrari's done this before. I mean, Ferrari hasn't always been great. Ferrari has spent years, but I mean, Ferrari, I think before Michael Schumacher won his world championship, it might've been 20 years since Ferrari had last won one. Ferrari has gone through decades of struggling before. I mean, I feel like they might be headed right back to it.
Yeah,
I feel like Kimi is bored, and I mean, Felipe Massa, Felipe Massa is no better than almost every single other driver in Formula One. He may be like the 10th, 12th best, maybe 13th, 14th. I mean, you put Jenson Button in that car, and he would have won the world championship last year.
Oh, I think that's definitely true. I mean, we had this discussion last year that effectively Massa, if he is in a good car, he's a good qualifier if he's in a good car. And if Massa is out in front or he has to make one pass in a race, and as long as he doesn't have to race in the rain, he's a perfectly fine driver. But you get him anywhere in the middle of the pack where he's got to make a couple of important passes in order to win a race or in order to get on the podium, and he just really doesn't seem capable of doing it. And I feel like maybe Ferrari's dedication to Massa at this point is coming back to bite them.
I agree. I mean, well, then if you think about it, this is another thing that was said about Button for this last race, is that at the beginning he was stuck behind, I think it was Fernando Alonso, who was slow, who held up a big train of cars for a lot of laps. Button got around him, like, on the second or third lap, and he went and took off and caught the leaders. It took, like, Barrichello, who I think was next, or it took whoever was next, like, 10 more laps to get around him.
Yeah.
But Button just, he had to do it, so he did. And only Lewis would have done it. Lewis Hamilton would have passed him.
Oh, absolutely.
Sebastian Vettel, Robert Kubica would have passed him. I don't know what other – and Fernando Alonso, if he hadn't been in the slow car, would have passed himself. But
yeah.
But otherwise, I don't think – I think that that's sort of like Formula One's elite right there.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's a pretty good summation of it. I think it mostly comes as a shock to me having seen Button I guess be hindered by his car for so long. It's shocking to see what he's actually capable of when he has the technology on his side to really be able to excel.
I watched his last victory, his victory in Hungary in the rain, and it was an epic drive. I knew then that he was a great driver because of how beautifully he drove that car in the rain.
You know, I think we actually watched that race together.
Oh.
I remember that because that was one of the few F1 races that I would have watched that season.
Yeah, that was a season, maybe the last. No, that was the last season before Honda got the world car color scheme. Oh God, Honda. Well, at least Braun's doing well. I don't know. I mean, this is turning out to be a very interesting season.
You can't say it's not. And at this point, regardless of whether Braun goes on to dominate the rest of the season, regardless of whether or not Button wins every remaining race, the fact that the field behind him seems so open is going to make for a lot of interesting races over the coming weeks.
Yeah, I mean it's buttons to lose. I mean Barrichello's proven that he's not going to be in second every time. So I mean Button, I just I don't know why I can't I don't know why Button can't win the next. To me, Button's my favorite indefinitely until somebody can get close to him.
Fair enough. I mean, it certainly hasn't been anybody near him in either of the races so far. So if he can keep up this kind of pace, he's got to be the favorite, and that
Yeah.
certainly looks to be the way the odds are running right now.
I see another pole and another win for Button in China, or wherever they are next.
Well, do you have any more points that you really want to touch on here?
No, I'm good.
I think we've covered just about all of the major talking points in the season to date. So we will be back with another edition of the Speaking English F1 podcast after the April 19th in race in China. And most likely we will be chatting about Jenson Button having taken his third straight race and having quadrupled his total number of Formula One wins. Go Jenson.
Go Jensen.
Thanks for joining me as always, Carl. Everybody, have a lovely evening.
Good night, Andrew.